This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and myself, Mimi Rosenberg. We turn our attention now to Mexico. There is an urgent situation facing teachers and their union, the Coordinador Nacional de Trabajadores de la Educación in Mexico. June 19th, teachers in Oaxaca were fired upon by the federal police as part of the effort by President Enrique Peña Nieto to break the nationwide strike by teachers against the government's privatizing education reform program. The peaceful demonstration was also held to demand the immediate release from prison of three top union officers. These union leaders have been jailed and sent to a federal prison more than 1,000 miles away by the government on trumped-up charges. 10 people were killed by the federal police, with dozens more wounded and 22 disappeared. Protest organizers are also demanding, supported now by labor and community activists across the United States, that the U.S. government halt the military aid to Mexico, as the teachers made available to the Mexican federal police to repress the teachers have been sent by the U.S. under the Plan Marita. So the U.S. is sending military aid for weaponry that is used by the Mexican government against the strikers. The anti-union repression against striking teachers in Mexico, following on the heels of the measures imposed by the international financial institutions such as the IMF and the World Bank, must concern all workers and trade unions the world over. And I am delighted to have with me Laura Carlson, who is sacrificing some of her sleep to get up and speak to us about this incredibly important situation. And Laura, why don't we begin by more flesh out for us the detail of the privatizing of the education reform program, in quotes, that is the promoter for the strike by the teachers' union?
Well, this is a package of neoliberal reforms that President Peña Nieto rammed through Congress at the beginning of his presidency. And in the case of education, what this reform would do is essentially, they call it privatizing because it opens up the schools to private funding for certain types of things that will deepen the inequality that already exists within the schools. For example, when schools have to rely on private funds for textbooks or for infrastructure improvements and that kind of thing, then of course the poorer communities lose more and the more wealthier communities gain, and the state abdicates its responsibilities in terms of free public education. And this is a huge problem because education is already so unequal here in Mexico. There is a real crisis in the educational system. It's failing many, many people. There are a third of the schools that don't have basic things such as running water, bathrooms, and even walls and a roof. There are classes that are being held, you know, outdoors in communities that don't even really have schools. So it's a huge problem, and it's a reform that was created not in Mexico and certainly not with consultations with the teachers themselves, who are, of course, the people who are closest to the real crisis in education within the country. It's a reform that was devised by a business group called Mexicans First and the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development and Cooperation. As you know, in the United States, because you've seen similar reforms there, the whole concept of it is to create public education, not for human development, but to serve the changes within the labor market. And to apply a kind of a one-size-fits-all forms of measuring not education or, again, human development, but productivity in some ways and the ways in which the education sector could serve the needs of big business. These kinds of reforms, especially when they're applied in a developing country, exclude huge numbers of people and limit the horizons of students to become kind of cogs in the economy.
I wonder if you can put in context for us the incredible violence that was unleashed against the teachers. Give us more of a sense of who these teachers are within the context of the union, and again, the incredible violence that was unleashed, which some people were certainly want here to believe that there is a democracy within Mexico, but I dare say that has not been the case when it comes to the overall population and the force of the Mexican federal government.
Yeah, we were surprised, although the protests have been going on for months. Really, they've been going on for 3 years since the reform was passed against the will of the teachers, many of the teachers, by the violence and the direct attack of the June 19th massacre in a town in southern Mexico, the state of Oaxaca, called Nochitlán. What happened there was the teachers were protesting, and one of the common tactics has been to create road blockades and only let certain cars pass. And the federal police and what's called the gendarmerie came in, which is like a military police, came in and attacked them directly. There's evidence that they were given orders to shoot to kill. And this was a busy town square. It was market day. The protesters were there, and there were also a large number of sympathizers in the area, with the result that 10 people were killed and over 100 people were wounded, and there have been people who have been arrested as well. So it was a massive attack on the movement. Presumably, the idea was to send a message that they were no longer going to put up with these roadblocks or these protests, which, of course, is completely anti-democratic when you have such a huge sector of the people most involved and with most at stake in the educational reform, in addition to the students they teach, that are asking for major revisions in that reform. Again, we have a pre-government, which is the ruling party for 71 years of authoritarian one-party rule until the year 2000. And they're back again with the Peña Nieto government. And it's not unusual for them to use these kinds of tactics when they're unable to suppress a grassroots movement by other means. So in that case, it isn't surprising, although, of course, many people, after all this talk about Mexico being in a transition to democracy, had expected a different type of behavior. So in many ways, the government itself revealed its true colors, unfortunately, in this attack. Now there's been so much public outpouring and such a huge international cry of outrage regarding this massacre that the government has been forced to the negotiating table. They're sitting down with representatives of the union. It's important to take a minute to describe this union. We're talking about the Coordinadora, as you mentioned, which is the National Association of Education Workers. And the Coordinadora is the democratic current within the huge National Union of Education Workers. They have been around for over three decades attempting to democratize the union, which has been traditionally run by union bosses with a close relationship to the ruling party. And this movement has survived over all these decades, and of course it's experiencing a resurgence now by being the organization that's really concentrating and leading the resistance to this education reform that comes primarily from the teachers, their own constituencies, but has also encountered a huge level, especially if you look at states like Chiapas and Oaxaca, of support from the communities, from civil society as well.
At this point, can you also tell us something about Plan Merida? So, as we mentioned, there has been a call on people across the U.S. of progressive ilk to critique the armaments, the money for the militarization and the military might that is used against workers within Mexico. Tell us more about Plan Merida, if you can.
Well, the Merida Initiative, and also sometimes called Plan Mexico or Plan Merida, was announced by President Bush in 2007 as a way for the United States to support the war on drugs in Mexico. And it was first appropriated by Congress in 2008. It was devised as a three-year plan to dismantle the drug cartels. This was shortly after then-President Felipe Calderón announced this disastrous, we can clearly see that now, war on drugs strategy in Mexico at the very end of 2006. Since then, the United States government has sent around $3 billion worth of training, or has appropriated training and equipment to Mexico, most of it in the form of security aid to the police and to the military. This includes airplanes, helicopters, all types of military and security aid, and training in places like the School of Americas, where we know that the training is heavily focused on anti-insurgency or repressive types of tactics. They've taken Mexicans to Iraq to learn the kinds of occupation tactics that were developed there. And what we've seen here is that all of this is going not even so much to fight the drug cartels, because there's been no change in the flow of illicit drugs to the United States as a result of all this effort, supposed effort. And there's been a huge increase in violence as the cartels have been entering into turf wars, and the whole situation has been destabilized by the participation of the army and with U.S. support. And mainly what all this is going toward is to repression of the people itself. So the demand to suspend the Merida Initiative has been circulating, certainly in the United States and in Mexico as well, since it was first announced. And it was clear that it was going to be a way to bolster the repressive might of an authoritarian government. And as time goes by, and especially with this latest example of the use of military and police forces against a grassroots movement in the case of the education workers, it's been very clear that that's precisely the aim and the use of this war on drugs and the USA that's going toward it.
I wonder if you can also comment, there was a report that came through that recently there were public protests by border factory maquiladora workers in Ciudad Juarez. Do you have information on that? It would seem that the labor activism is very much on the rise, but of course, so is the suppression and oppression of the workers. But what can you tell us about that?
Yes, this is recent, that there was a blockage of the international bridge from workers from several different maquiladoras. In the last year or so, we've seen an increase in protests against the conditions in the maquiladoras, the conditions of wages and working conditions themselves, which has been a real positive sign. There was a labor movement within a company called Lexmark and others, and it's a positive sign because there had been a certain lull in worker protests for many years, and yet the conditions have continued to be terrible, particularly in terms of how low the wages are and the living and working conditions of the workers there, many of them women and young women who are supporting families. So there is an increase in labor movement along the border. Other sectors are looking to understand that there's a number of organizations along the border that are supporting this, and we do expect that will be on the rise. And of course, in that context, we're very wary of and watching for the possibility of repression as well.
I want to move back, thank you, to the teachers. On July 9th, the report also has it that hundreds of teachers affiliated with the Resiste organization and the National Coordination of Education Workers again seized a dozen highway toll booths south of Juarez and across the state of Chihuahua as part of the intensified national movement against the 2013 education reform law. And I should say also that what we didn't mention in repudiation of the repression against teachers and their supporters, including the firings of several thousand teachers for refusing to take part in a mandatory evaluation exam. Can you tell us more about that, Laura?
Yeah, there are two things that are particularly important about this Chihuahua movement. First of all, I'll start with the last one because I didn't mention it before. The evaluation is one of the key demands for changing the education reform of the Democratic Teachers Movement. And what they're saying is we are not against evaluation. We're open to evaluation, but this particular type of standard evaluation is a violation of labor rights, and it's a type of evaluation that does not take into account the conditions in which we work. And what they're saying is that there is such a broad range of conditions within education. There are teachers who are working in the poorest communities and that are actually, you know, paying out of their own pocket for such basic things as chalk and pencils. And then there are teachers who are working in very wealthy schools with computers and such. And so to evaluate both students and teachers with the same kind of a grid, is going to be obviously prejudicial to the teachers who are working in the most difficult conditions. Also, because of the way that this is taken out of the hands of the union, there is the possibility, and we're seeing it, as you mentioned, there have been thousands of teachers who've been fired for failing to take the exam, and there's a mechanism in which many, many thousands of teachers could be fired for failing the exam, and none of this has any labor rights guaranteed. So the union, which has been strong, although not necessarily democratic, particularly from the rank-and-file point of view, loses almost all its power of negotiation or protection of labor rights. There's really no appeal process for these firings, and there's the potential that's very high of using these kinds of mechanisms to really purge the union of some of the most dedicated teachers and teachers that are most involved in the process of democratization and defense of public education. Now, the second point is that the state of Chihuahua is not ordinarily concerned among the strongholds of the Democratic of the Democratic current of the teachers' union. So what we're seeing right now is really the expansion of not just protests against a reform, but the construction of a democratic teachers' movement in Mexico. As I say, it's been going on for a long time. It's actually held the leadership of important state unions such as Oaxaca and others for many, many years, where the CENTE, as opposed to the more official parts of the union, have been elected into the leadership. But now what we're seeing is that it's becoming stronger and far more visible and showing strong ties to society in other states as well, including Chihuahua and some of the northern states where it hadn't traditionally had the same level of representation and organization.
Laura, as we wind up, what have been the repercussions for the government of the 10 people who were killed by the federal police and the dozens wounded and, as I said, still, to our knowledge, unexplained disappearance of 22 people? Is the government on the ropes at this point?
Yeah, I think you could easily talk about a political crisis. If you look at the latest figures, President Peña Nieto's popularity or approval ratings are at an all-time low. In fact, they're really at rock bottom. Now, of course, with an authoritarian government, the representative democracy does not work because of high levels in fraud and vote buying in Mexico, and without re-election, in some ways the PRI has never really cared all that much about its level of approval. But this does represent a political crisis. They have been forced to negotiate with the teachers. They're in that process now. There are three working groups that have been opened up on political, economic, and educational activities. And so that kind of demonstrates that they're scrambling to try to figure out how to respond. They tried outright repression. It had a high political cost, both an international image, which also, when you take it along with Ayotzinapa, the disappearance of the 43 students in Guerrero, and other major crises that the government has faced, or rather caused, had a huge impact on its international image. And they're also very concerned about a number of things. They're very concerned that this teachers' movement has become a lightning rod, not only for protests against the educational reform, but what they have at stake is that if the teachers manage to renegotiate and even get rid of some of the most objectionable aspects of the education reform, then that could open up more popular protest against the other neoliberal reforms. All these reforms were pressed through a pre-controlled Congress and have high levels of rejection, really, among the population. When you look at the privatization of the oil sector especially, there was a lot of popular protest against this, and yet because of the control of the government itself, both the executive branch and the legislative and the legislature, they went through anyway, and the people's movements were not able to block them. If the teachers go forward with saying this isn't the demand, this isn't the education reform we want, and they have a very specific proposal for what kinds of reforms are really needed, if they go forward with that and create a broader, ever broader grassroots movement that the government's forced to respond to, they're afraid that it's going to be possible to do the same thing with some of the other reforms. This should be done. There should have been a much broader social consensus before these reforms were pushed through, and they shouldn't have pushed through such neoliberal reforms that affected public goods and public interests so gravely against the will of the majority of people. So this would be a positive thing, but of course for the government, it's being seen as a huge threat because it has both the Peña Nieto legacy and the interests of the business class riding on the success of these neoliberal reforms. Just today it came out in the paper that the business sector that's organized in the business council that's nationwide is pressing strongly to say to the government as they enter into negotiations, we are here. You know, they don't say it out loud, but we created this reform, essentially, and we are not going to allow you to back down on it. So we're seeing the sides split in quite polarized positions. As the go into negotiations, the CENTE has said that they will not accept anything short of reforms to the education reform. And it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that.
And we'll keep on top of that. And thank you for your important analysis. We need to keep in touch with what is happening in Mexico, most obviously. And we have been speaking with Laura Carson in Mexico. And thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Mimi.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.